Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. We are exactly 1 month away from NAHU's 30th Annual Capital Conference. Leading up to our premier legislative event of the year, over the next few weeks, we are going to be reviewing our federal priorities in detail. Today, on the trail of last week's Democratic presidential debate, we are going to be discussing specific iterations of Medicare for All that are referred to as single payer and the public option. Joining us for this week's detailed policy review is NAHU CEO and author of NAHU's new single payer healthcare certification course, Janet Troutline. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. The podcast is distributed on these platforms every Friday and is included in NAHU's weekly member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. Welcome, Janet.
Thank you.
The new single-payer healthcare certification course is a three-hour deep dive into the nuance of these systems, but we won't be spending that long discussing the issue now. What are some of the basic distinctions between single-payer and a public option?
Well, a single-payer program basically covers everyone. And even though you might have heard some of the presidential candidates talk about having a Medicare for All that allows people to do some other things, the distinguishing characteristic is that whether it's today or 2 years from now, single payer covers everyone and it provides the same benefit for everyone. Now, when people talk about a public option, the way it's described, would be added on in addition to what's already there. And it's usually described as something that's just another choice, which is not the case. And that's why a lot of people seem to think that that might be a good idea.
NAHU's next Live from NAHU webinar is this coming Thursday, January 30th. On that webinar, Marcy will be discussing some of the Democratic presidential primary candidates' approaches to healthcare reform, many of which include either a single payer or public option. Senators Sanders and Warren received early recognition for their support of a single payer system, more recently the public option, as supported by the majority of other candidates, has been gaining some traction. What are the dangers of a public option to our current health insurance market?
The problem with a public option is that it's not just another choice. And as I was saying earlier, people look at it as just being another choice. And in fact, the majority of Democratic candidates that support that really feel like they're just offering an additional choice in addition to the private market. The problem is that when you have a market for goods and services, in this case, the services of paying for health care, the idea of a market where you've got competitive players is that the rules are the same for each of the players in the market. So you can't have a market where there are better advantages for some market players than others, because then it's not really a well-functioning market. And healthcare has enough problems with being a market where you make subjective healthcare choices. So with the public option, the reason why it doesn't play by the same rules is that a public option does not pay providers the same way that private plans are able to pay. It has a special ability to pay them based on Medicare rates, or even if it pays them a percentage of Medicare rates, it pays them significantly less than what a private plan can pay. And if you look at the way a healthcare premium is structured, the vast majority of that premium is designated, even according to the MLR, to pay for healthcare expenses. So when the expenses are lower, that means that the public option is just going to always be lower if it is allowed to do something that the private plans are not permitted to do. And so it's not really a competitive playing field. And what happens with a public option is that it will either very quickly or over a period of time crowd out private options, so that ultimately it becomes the only option, which is what I just said a single payer was. So it's just a different version of it and a little slightly slower track, but not much slower.
The political climate in Washington, D.C. seems to be increasingly partisan, with uncertainty being the only certainty in healthcare reform due to the continuous legal challenges and party politics. Over a dozen single-payer and public option bills were introduced in the last year alone. How real of a threat is the public option? In other words, what sort of shift in the party makeup of the House and Senate could make a public option likely?
So the first thing that you should be aware of is that if you looked at all of the legislation pending that has a public option, it's almost always embedded into a bill that is labeled an ACA fix bill. So they want to improve the ACA. And a lot of people who do want to make improvements to the ACA might look at that as being preferable to single payer. They would say, yes, we'd rather just make the ACA better, get rid of what doesn't work with it, and improve it than a single payer. Not realizing that incorporated in with some changes that might be desirable or other changes that are not desirable, such as a public option. And I will tell you that every single fixed bill that's out there, for all the Democrats' fixed bills, all have a public option in them. And they all believe it's just an additional option for people to select from. And they have other things in them, like reinsurance, that we like. So it would be really easy, if one does not look at the details, to see how one of those ACA fixed bills that might be touted as that, even without much discussion of the public option, and could easily slip through. That's even more likely when we look at what could happen in the upcoming election. Because during the election, it's possible that the Senate could shift over to being controlled by Democrats with either a narrow majority or a large majority. The House is already controlled by Democrats. Even if President Trump remains in the White House, you cannot count on the veto when you have both chambers that are controlled by the same party. And this can happen even when they're not both controlled, but particularly when we're making statements that say an ACA fix is better than a single payer. And then you look at these pieces of legislation that could easily pass both of those houses. And even if they were vetoed, those vetoes could be easily overridden. And if you think a veto is not easily overridden, I will tell you, it's happened lots of times in history. If you look, even if I go back so far as Richard Nixon had 7 vetoes overridden. Gerald Ford, 12 vetoes overridden. Jimmy Carter, 2 vetoes overridden. Ronald Reagan, 9 vetoes overridden. George H.W. Bush, 1 veto overridden. Bill Clinton, 2. George W. Bush, 4 vetoes overridden. Barack Obama, 1 veto overridden. So far, President Trump hasn't, but that doesn't mean that it can't occur. It's not that difficult to override a veto. It does require both houses to vote with a 2/3 majority, but if you have significant enough control, it's not out of the realm of something that can happen. So it's actually very, very likely that a public option could happen if we don't do the right kind of education. If we don't come out and force and say, this is unacceptable, here's why. Because we're the ones that understand these markets. And a lot of these people that think it's just a choice don't understand that it's not just a choice. Because maybe they have no intention of crowding out the private market. Most of them don't. And they wouldn't understand the unintended consequences.
Now, you experienced the debates during the ACA regarding the public option. Vice President Biden has been very quick to remind Americans that a public option was one of his and President Obama's goals. What were the arguments then that kept the public option out of the ACA, and are those arguments still valid?
Actually, some of the arguments that I've been talking about were some of the ones that came up. But once the public option was no longer under consideration, they just stopped talking about it for a while, or there were, you know, some statements made that there would be a different rate being used to pay providers that would be more than Medicare. It would still be a rate that would be set by government and not be a negotiated rate. The reason why people stopped talking about it is Senator Conrad at that time introduced legislation for co-ops. And so then co-ops became the topic of discussion. They replaced this idea of the public option in that they would not be run by insurance companies. So people who wanted an additional option that was not an insurer option bought into this idea of the co-ops. As we know, most of the co-ops failed, largely because they didn't have the right actuarial type background. A lot of them underpriced themselves trying to gain market share, and for other reasons, they were undercapitalized. Even with money that was available to them to set up, they were still undercapitalized. Co-ops just diverted that whole discussion away from public option at that time.
What would a public option mean to not only health insurance agents and brokers, but also their clients?
Well, when we talk about crowd out, obviously we want the private market to be available. That's what all of our members do for a living. They help their clients find individual, small group, large group coverage. But there's actually another consequence. So we want our members to be employed, obviously. Our clients, we want them to be able to have good quality coverage. The other consequence is the more providers that are paid at lower rates, the longer the waiting lines will have to get in. We already see that today. Let's just use Medicaid for an example. So Medicaid today pays very low rates, and often people who are covered under Medicaid have trouble getting an appointment. They have to wait because providers can only accept so many Medicaid patients, and they have to have enough better paying patients who have private coverage to make up for their losses on the Medicaid side. The more people that we have that are covered under some sort of a public program, the less the providers make and the fewer patients that they'll be able to see. So it's just a recipe for waiting. Some providers may actually decide that they can't afford to do it anymore. We've heard a lot of stories in particular about rural hospitals that actually already struggle to stay in business. They don't have the type of volume that some of the larger urban hospitals have, or even some of the larger hospitals in more populated areas. And they already struggle. And if we reduce the compensation going to them further, there are many studies that have shown that they're likely to close their doors. So that's the unintended consequence. The more people that are under a public payment rate, the more difficult it will be to actually obtain the health care itself that this coverage is intended to pay for.
What is the most important thing that agents and brokers can do to oppose single payer and a public option?
Well, there are several things. So when we try to get something done legislatively, you all know we work on all different types of topics, and we have over the years. And sometimes we tell you that we're going to do things the quiet way, and we're going to get something attached to another piece of legislation so that it can ride along and just quietly be done. This is not that kind of an issue. There are certain kinds of issues where you have to be extremely vocal, very loud, and you have to just squash the idea altogether. You have to make it so undesirable for this to happen that the legislators are concerned about what the consequences are of doing it, because all of them want to be reelected. And if they think that a particular issue affects their ability to be reelected, then they will think twice before they do it. Now, one of the best ways to be very vocal that we have coming right up is our Capital Conference. We are really counting on all of you to show up in large numbers at this conference so that we can really put this idea down and really do a lot of good, strong educating on what the consequences of single payer and a public option or a Medicare buy-in, all of those things, that they would destroy the private market and that they are unacceptable. In order to do that, we have to be very, very loud. It's not something that you quietly do. You have to make the idea just radioactive, that it's something that they are afraid to do. So I'm hoping that those of you who normally may not attend Capital Conference, it's coming up next month, will think about doing that. The more people we have there, the more likely we are to be able to get rid of this idea before it moves any further. So I hope that you'll do that. It's always good to meet with your member of Congress. When we send you an Operation Shout, it's great for you to respond to it, but sometimes you just have to physically show up. So always think about meeting with your member of Congress and district. And don't be afraid to say, look, I'm a market expert. You don't have to be belligerent to have this conversation. You can just say, this is what I do for a living. I understand this, and this is something that is not going to be okay for us, and we oppose this strongly. And we oppose this not just for ourselves, but for all the many clients that we serve. So I hope you'll come to Capital Conference. that's a very helpful thing that's coming up very quickly. It's a perfect time in this election year to really make that very, very clear to those that are running for office, which is everyone in the House and about a third of the Senate, you know, as well as the president. He's not for a public option, but it's very important that we make this a very loud part of the debate.
It is now time for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour Toast of the Week. This week, we're toasting to the winners of the Healthcare Happy Hour Podcast Contest. Congratulations to Karen Neuschwinder and the Chicago Southland Chapter. Congratulations are also in order for the top three chapters, Minnesota, Omaha, and Phoenix.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit NAHU.org.